It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Right. Mr. Jules Gill, how are you doing?
Hello, hello, hello. It is time for another UBP, baby.
The UBP. I'm Scott Tilford. You're Jules Gill. Everyone else listening has likely submitted some questions. If you haven't, get on it next week. The Entitled Partner Podcast is where we gather up all sorts of takes, opinions, whatever else is going on in the gaming industry. And honestly, we've got a hell of a swath of stuff to get through for this.
Nice.
And I also wanted to roll in a few questions from previous weeks as well. So we've got a lot of different things here. Now, I'm going to open on a hell of a statement from Nick Moore. Now, this is a... this is a hell of a statement. Nick Moore says that Sonic 2 was better than the Batman for him. I want to know what you think.
Fact is, I won't lie to you, mate. I've not seen Sonic 2. I saw the first one with good old Rich Hudson back in the day, and I had an absolute blast with him watching that, because it basically took us both by surprise, because we expected it to be a very bad film, and it came out being an above average film. So everyone was pleasantly surprised with that. Mm-hmm. But I have got no interest in seeing Sonic 2. I think it's just because, like, oh, yeah, okay, you know that classic thing of, like, fool me once, shame on you. This was like, surprise me once, great on us. Surprise me twice, nah, I'll
just
pass
quit while you're ahead.
Like, whatever. Like,
it's weird, because I mean, Sonic 2 is like, I kind of had fun with it, but my wife was hating every second of it, because she didn't
really?
Like the first
she hated
one.
It.
But like, we were watching the second one, and there's a lot of cringe in the second one. There's a lot of like, this will be funny to a 5-year-old and no one else kind of thing.
Everything that I saw, it seemed like it was doubling down on the aspects that people didn't actually want to be doubled down on.
A little bit.
What people liked about it was that it was a charming, heartfelt story with great Jim Carrey scenes in. And this one was like, oh, you want Jim Carrey? Here's loads.
There's a lot of Jim Carrey.
That we've seen Batman Forever. We know how off the rails he can go sometimes.
There's a lot of like, just in this case, there's a lot of just cutting to him, a single shot, medium length, where he's just improvising something on the spot. Mm-hmm. And then that's it. That's the scene. And it's all, they maybe put another character in with him, but that's about it.
Kind of a big smack of Ghostbusters 2016 vibes, where it was just like, let's just improv and just take all the cuts. Let's not cut anything out. Let's have everything you say is gold. Let's put it in there. It's like, okay.
Oh, he's like full on.
Let's chill.
Yeah, it's like full on 90s Jim Carrey. The thing is, like, I sound negative on it, because it's not a very well-made movie, and every single second of the intro is surgically removed from other blockbusters.
Fantastic.
But I did have fun watching the things that I had like a Pavlovian response to it, where I was just sort of watching these things that I love already from the 90s going like, oh, Knuckles is climbing a wall. Remember when he did that in the game? Oh, that's cool. Or like stuff like that.
He's doing the thing.
He's doing the thing that I know, and I can do the Leo meme and just point to it and go, cool, it's the thing. And so like, the thing is, I am sick, because I would largely agree with Nick Moore that I had more fun personally with Sonic 2 than I did with the Batman. I thought that was a bit belabored.
I know that's also
insane.
But the Batman is modern Odyssey.
A Batman is a modern Odyssey.
And as such, it's like a very like tense and quite uncomfortable tale that is told in quite excruciating lengths. And you know what? There's some cringy moments in the Batman as well, like with the Riddler and all of his like Twitter followers. Like, it's a bit weird in some places, but overall, I'd say as a piece of art that we should always value cinema as.
Yes.
I enjoyed The Batman more because of the way it was shot, the way it was directed, what story it had to tell, and obviously moving things forward for the Batman franchise. The Sonic sequel, however, definitely just smacked of just like, oh, okay, you know, we are literally giving you what you expect. Like,
yeah,
this is everything that you expect. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. Mm. But when it comes to which probably has the more entertainment value, it goes to whether artistic versus popcorn, which one do you prefer?
Like, oh, totally. I mean, and it's like, I mean, I bought a figure for both. It's how I would engage.
Are they going to fight each other?
Yeah, well, they're on my desk right now. You can't get them separated. But it's like, in terms of long-standing, yeah, like you said, pieces of art, Batman is obviously the actual film. Like, Sonic 2 is barely a film. It's just a series of triggers that remind you of things that you already liked going in. Like, it's,
but you described exactly the same thing with Spider-Man Homecoming, where No Way Home, that was it. You said that it was exactly the same thing. It's just exactly what you expect.
Oh, literally.
Just delivered in a nice package.
Brand synergy the movie is No Way Home. Yeah. But I think for Sonic, though, it's fascinating, because loads of kids in the screening, there'll be an entire generation of people or children who love Sonic as a movie character. And I think that's kind of fascinating because Sega don't have any tie-in game right now. Like, the last Sonic game was like Sonic Forces. And if you want something that's actually good, it's Sonic Mania. So it's like, you've got to go back like 4 years or whatever.
Sega are absolutely mad. They're driving me mad as well at the moment, because they had obviously all of that goodwill from Sonic Mania. And it's like, okay, that was a long time ago now. Like, where is the follow-up to something like this that fans want to see? And it's like, okay, cool, we are going to be working on it further down the line, but why not try at least to tie something Sonic 2 related into the release of your movie? A HD remaster of Sonic 2, or like Sonic and Knuckles, and the original trilogy, like, now available on, like, I don't know, phones, bid in a brand new package. Something, do something,
literally anything, like
put a video game IP to a video game.
Yeah, that was the thing, because I was like the end credits of Sonic 2 are made into a video game that run really well. It goes between 2D and 3D, and I was like, oh my god, this is reminding me of all these games that I guarantee most children in this screening haven't played and have no idea what this is. But it's just a weird thing where Sonic is bigger than ever. It made $72 million in its opening weekend.
It was seven times more than
what Batman made in the same weekend. Obviously, that's been out for a bit longer, but still, Sonic is flying, and it's kind of just crazy that Sonic is bigger than ever in a mainstream sense. But it's all related to the movies.
It's weird. It's like you get some like actors who jump from TV to movie, and this is like jumping from video games to movie. I don't know whether he's going to even bother looking back, because why would he? It's more of a commercial risk to release a video game at this point.
I guess like they've got Sonic Frontiers later this year, assumedly later this year, like the Breath of the Wild Shadow of the Colossus style one, where it's
the one
Sonic
that I'm literally putting into my this is a big pile of bollocks pile, because that is going to be bad. I'm sorry to any Sonic fan out there, but come on, pal, look me square in the eye without unflinching and tell me that this is going to be a good game. It's not.
I think I know that you're right, but I just want to run in an open world as Sonic and then just bounce off stuff.
Who doesn't? That's the dream. But this is the thing. A dream is not reality in this sense.
It's true. Hopefully that game is better than Absolute Toss, but we'll see. Nate the Gamer says he's looking for a good Sonic game to get in the mood before watching the Sonic movie at the weekend. And he says, how bad is Sonic Forces? Now, Sonic Forces is pretty bad. It's pretty terrible. If you're going to pick up a Sonic game, it should be Sonic Mania. Maybe you did one of the Sega Ages versions of Sonic 1 or 2.
Yeah,
or
Sonic Spinball, just for a bit
Sonic
of fun.
Spinball, if you're going to go 3D, I guess Generations, Colors, or maybe Unleashed, but that's got bad melee.
I tell you what, mate, don't even bother with it and just go Sonic All-Stars Racing Transform. Just get on the driving game, because do you know what? Genuinely, and this is hand on heart, no word of a lie, it is up there with one of my all-time favorite kart racing games ever.
Yes, it is really solid.
In my grand top-tier list that includes the likes of like Diddy Kong Racing, Crash Team Racing, and that lot, it goes Super Mario 64 kart racer. I absolutely love that game. Mm-hmm. And then it's going to be Mario 8.
Because I really
deluxe with all the new tracks. Yes. They're absolutely outstanding. Then it would be CTR.
CTR all the way.
And then, believe it or not, be Speed Freaks, obviously, because they're amazing. And then it would be Sonic All-Stars Racing Transformed. I love that game.
That's a show,
man. It's so well polished, mate. It is brilliant.
At some point, we should do an actual kart racing podcast, because Looney Tunes Kart Racer should be in there. And like, there's, I mean, the thing is, like, Speed Freaks, I've not even thought of in about 25 years.
It's
but that was
so
a good, time.
Good, that game. And do you know what? It did so much with so little, because it's like they didn't even animate the carts. The kids are literally sitting on nothing and just have floating wheels next to them. I mean,
Lego Racer was a big deal as well. Like, if they ever brought that back.
I feel like Lego Racer, there's a lot of like nostalgia that is blinding people on that one, because that is a big bang of 6 out of 10 energy. Like, we both know that. Like, it's not great. And the fact that the most enjoyment you could have with that game was building your own car. And my favorite thing was taking the basic chassis and then building a brick wall in front of the driving seat so he couldn't see. So I was just driving around like a chimney stack, just like, get out the way.
I was just saying, knocking everyone out the way.
Oh, it's brilliant.
We'll, at some point, we'll revisit that stuff. We should also do the best 6 out of 10 games ever, because I feel like everyone knows what that means. And I've long said I'll take a really good 6 out of 10 game over a 10 out of 10 most days.
I'd say that most Tenchu games are 6 out of 10 games. And that's why we love them, because you're like, oh, the jank is horrible. But
there's something about it. It's like charming, and it's a bunch of people trying something. And it's like there's something about a 6, 7 out of 10 game that sometimes is more memorable than a big opulent 5-star thing. Mr. Jacob Sawyer throws his hat in the ring with Sonic and Mario at the 2016 Olympic Games as the best Sonic game.
Wow,
I didn't play 2016's one. I played the 2020 one, which is pretty good. He also says, though, if we could interview one person in gaming, who would we choose? Now, I don't know if yours would be Peter Molyneux.
I was actually going to say Peter Molyneux, just like me alone with him in the room for a bit, just a microphone, and then come out. I'll have like, blood stains on me. I'll be wiping my
Where's the money? What are you doing with the money?
We talked it out. Yeah. Be like, where? It's just got like a big bundle of like NFTs in my pocket there from like all the property thing that he's doing. No,
I was right
about
Goddess the other day, because he's still, I mean, he made £500,000 on Goddess. That was back in 2012 or something. Yeah. That game's still in early access. It never came out. Fans were asked into the studio to help finish it and code it. The team have completely moved on. I think it's like 3 or 4 people still working on it, quote unquote. But he just pocketed $500,000 and then went and made an NFT farm.
Do you know what? It's absolutely just madness, isn't it? Absolutely
he's
mad.
He's a minger.
I mean, like, I'd interview him, but it would only be to just ask the question why over and over, or like, Peter, why are you hitting yourself, Peter? Like,
Peter.
I joke. I'm sure he's a lovely man, but just don't buy anything that he's selling.
I think when we grew up, it was like Peter Molyneux was like the guy, because it was, oh my God, Fable, oh my God, Black and White, oh my God, Populous. And it was like he span all these tall tales and Milo and all that kind of stuff. And a lot of people kind of fell for that. And I was definitely like, oh my God, if he's just a dreamer. He's trying to do his best thing. And you want to believe in that. But I think after enough time has passed and enough lies have been told, enough hot air, his reputation is completely gone. But it was crazy last year seeing how much money he made in NFTs. Just immediately made a game just about farming and whatever, and he just made this insane amount of money again. I was like, oh my God.
I will not detract from the fact that the man knows how to make money. Like, he's got his finger on the button when it comes to, okay, what is the hot topic now? How am I going to push this forward? What new tech is just emerging that I can capitalize on? Now, I'm not saying that all of his ventures have worked out the way that he probably initially intended, and I don't think that Peter Molyneux sets out to make a bad experience,
right?
But there is a little bit of shadiness that is just making his shadow that little bit darker each and every time, you know?
No, definitely. I think for me, it would be it'd be someone in the indie scene. I think it would be maybe just a little bit someone who's heading up Devolver, because I feel like their rise is incredible. And I feel like they've
meteoric,
gone from
isn't
a,
it? Just how they went from like, being just another indie developer to being the hottest talking point at the likes of E3 with their presentation demo stuff that they did. And the games they've kicked out have just been hit after hit after hit.
And I love seeing like how, just how far they've come. I think, like I said, like Jules said, they went from like smaller 2D stuff to getting like Shadow Warrior 3 out there. And it's like they're putting their feet in these bigger pools over and over again. And I just feel like their attitude towards gaming sort of mimics mine, like how stupid and over the top and overly blustery and opulent a lot of the AAA stuff can feel, and how stupid those press conferences can feel, and how stuffed with terms they can feel. I feel like Devolver know what they are. They remind me of like A24, the film company. And I feel like they have the same kind of ethos of like, we're just going to cherry pick the best stuff and it will work. Like, you know, all the assumptions that the AAA industry has about what will sell, Devolver go, no, this will sell, this will work. And they put their money behind really good projects. And it just, I would maybe talk to someone like that. I don't know the names of the heads of Devolver, but I would just want to get their thoughts on like what they class as a risk. Because in the gaming industry, like most of the bigger companies class risks as anything that prioritizes actual creativity as opposed to bankable elements.
Do you know what? I'm actually surprised that you didn't say Hideo Kojima, because I really feel like you would just want to just be like, listen, I get it. And you'd walk towards him slowly and hug him and he'd be like, you understand it. He goes, I know. I've played all the Metal Gear games. I know everything about Death Stranded. You're my Princess Beach. You'd run towards
him. Well, that's the thing.
And you'd meld into one person and be Hideo Kojimot.
Like, and get harmonized. Maybe I'd finally get peace. I think I'd want to sit down with him and put that scene on, the bit when they run in slow motion. I'd have to watch his face for that bit in Death Stranding and go, sorry, so what was this? What were you doing? What was this?
Do you think it'd be like that moment when George Lucas watched the rough cut of Star Wars Episode 1? That's sort of like sitting in his chair like, oh, God.
Just sort of like looking around going like, eh? Eh? And everyone else is like, no, like this is not...
But you got to imagine that he's surrounded by like all of these like suited cronies that are like clapping, like, oh, it's a masterpiece, Hideo, it's a masterpiece. And he's just like, yeah, and he looks at you and you're like, Scott, why aren't you smiling? And like, what?
And I just scream internally because I can't actually say anything because somehow that game still came together. Next question from Nano King, who says, what has been your favorite AEW moment and how has the company reignited your love for the business? Now, we have Dynamite available for us today. And if you're a wrestling fan, we'll not spend too long on it, but there's a big weekend of wrestling coming up because there's two big shows and then there's one pay-per-view type thing and where every single championship belt's on the line.
Before we actually carry on with this, it's just reminded me, on the 3rd of September, the WWE are actually coming to Cardiff. So
I saw that.
Say to you, mate, you should come down because I know that we're planning a trip down. So please come down with them.
Come
see me in Cardiff, mate.
I'll come see you. I'm not bothered about WWE. It's a bit stinky, but
we'll have a good time.
We'll go there and point out. I can't think of a single WWE wrestler. Brock Lesnar,
Roman Reigns,
the lad who plays the guitar, who injured himself. Boogs.
You'll
find Boogs.
Boogs. To be fair, he is actually a big bounce energy.
Yes, it's they'll make it work. I think for my favorite AEW moment, it's probably when Eddie Kingston was fighting CM Punk and he got all covered in blood, but it was CM Punk's blood, and then Kingston was punching him and then he just sort of like screamed in his face because he was just loving the moment so much because he was finally getting to fight him. Or it would be Sammy Guevara's cutter on Cody when they both got
ladders. That was insane, man.
That thing was insane.
I absolutely loved just any of the feud between MJF and CM Punk. I thought that was possibly one of the most like beautifully crafted wrestling storylines going, and it delivered in a match that, while not maybe being one that people will say was a 5-star rating across the board, was so emotionally weighted.
Well, the fact that
they loved it,
did all the stuff with like when MJF was a kid and met Punk when he was a kid, and they brought bring that line in, and then MJF is still the villain, so he's like, oh, you thought that's what I cared about, but I didn't. Those things are cool. I'm looking forward to, I mean, the thing is, I loved when Hangman came back and he was dressed as the Marshmallow Man. Which I know that if you're like a follower, I came in when Punk came back, so I had no history with AEW at all. So I didn't know that when Hangman left, it was a big deal. And I didn't know there was a lot of weight around his return. So I get why people were annoyed that he came back as the Stay Put Marshmallow Man when it was meant to be this whole story of alcoholism and everything else. But for me, I was like, just hearing Excalibur go like, who's the Stay Put Marshmallow Man? Yeah, and then like ripped off his helmet. That thing was brilliant, but I get why people absolutely hated it.
There was one actual storyline that's ongoing at the moment that I'm really interested to see how it plays out. Mm. And that's Daniel Bryanson and John Moxley with their new tag
Blackpool
team.
Blackpool Combat Club.
Yeah, really weird sort of like vibe they've got.
Oh, the stuff with Uta is phenomenal,
with
though.
With William Regal. But I love the fact that they seem to be creating a sort of factional war between themselves and another group as they try and recruit new members, like how they're going to divide people to bring them in. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, this is really good because they are two phenomenally talented wrestlers. Mm-hmm. And if they're going to do what Bryan Danielson said that he loved doing in like a previous interview for WWE years ago, he said he loves elevating new talent. Mm-hmm. Like, he doesn't care who he fights as long as he has the best matches. So it means that I hope that he's going to be cherry picking who they fight in this sort of like ongoing storyline. Whether or not they win or lose doesn't really matter, because we'll get to see the best of the next crop of wrestlers coming up through AEW.
Well, the thing that I love as well is that you've got, because you know he says, like, how did it reignite your love for the business? Well, the thing that I dropped off with WWE was that across the 2000s, it just started feeling really cringe. It wasn't really about actual fun athleticism and actual impressive stunt work or whatever. It was just cringy characters, cringy backstage segments. performance. It just felt naff. And so I dropped off. A lot of AEW is addressing that stuff. Like, they draw such a distinction between what a wrestler is and what a sports entertainer is, which is what Chris Jericho's new shtick is. And
which I love, by the way.
It's great. He's just walking that line of like, WWE. Yeah, being like as fake as possible and then being like, oh, it's because I'm a sports entertainer. And it's like a direct shot at WWE. And obviously, like Jill said, you've got all these stuff with the Combat Club trying to be the purest version of literal like wrestling and combat and aggression as possible. And so those things, that whenever AEW addressed that feeling of like wrestling was great for a time and then it was cringy for a time and this is great again. And I feel like they know which matches to prioritize. They know how to put good shows on. There's hardly any backstage segment stuff. And it's just about like an incredible athletic, acrobatic performance. Yeah. Like, that's what gets me in.
100% agree, my friend.
I think that stuff, if it's backed by like good characters, good writing, like if anyone wants to get into stuff and if you go watch the CM Punk MJF stuff, that was fascinating. Even if you didn't have every beat of that, you know, even if you didn't grow up with every beat of it, it still totally worked. Next question from Jacob Sawyer. What game have you been so excited for based on the potential that you couldn't wait to play? I guess what's the most excited you've ever been for something in a pre-release?
Oh, hands down, Time Splitters 2.
Nice.
I think I've mentioned this before. It released a couple of days. Oh, man, my memory's failing me. It was either a couple of days before or after my birthday. It was meant to release on my birthday. Mm. And it was like, I was so, so excited that I gathered all my friends. I told them, like, we're not doing anything else this weekend. I'm getting this game. We're going to go and play it.
Right.
I think it actually dropped before my birthday. And that's why we were so excited, because you know, back in the day, you obviously didn't have the internet constantly being updated with all of like the release dates and like all of these things. It was just like haphazard.
You just ring shops up and be like, have you got an update on?
Yeah. And my one would be like for the official PlayStation magazine or whatever it was at the time. It would have like the release date in the little bio bit at the top. And I would go, like, that would be my gospel. I would treat it as that. So if I went into a store and found it earlier, amazing. If I went into the store and did it, I'd be like, you lied to me, sort of thing. So I remember telling people, like, we're booking this Friday off. Like we're just literally, as soon as school finishes, we're going back to mine, play this game, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's going to be fantastic. And then I remember passing by, I think it was Game, back in Newton Abbot. And I looked through the window and I saw a copy of it there. And I went in there and I had that mixture of like excitement and dread, because when I went in there, it was all like, you know, the display box copies, not the actual like game.
Yes.
So it's like, do you have it in? And they were like, yes, have you pre-ordered it? And I'm like... I was like, no, I haven't pre-ordered it, because I didn't even think.
But I'm a big fan, sir.
And then they were like, okay, let me just check the bat for you. And they said, come back in about an hour's time, because I need to do something else if you live local. And I was like, yeah, went back in. There was a copy there. I was like, I didn't even have like a mobile phone at the time. Didn't know like how to get in touch with my friends. So I just had to go into school the next day and be like, I've already got the game. Like, literally, come over to school now. We're playing this game. And man,
those things
so
like when
fun.
Gaming retail, like that's the thing. Like obviously physical game stores are completely going away. But like I think a few people have stories like that, where like something came in early or you were able to do a deal and get something early. Mm-hmm. Like, that's awesome. Mine was my Xbox 360. I took all my games. I think I've told this story before, but I took all my old games down to get an Xbox 360, because my mates had one, and I was like determined to play Crackdown. And so I just took all my games down, all my PS2 stuff, all my original Xbox stuff, because I was like, oh, I'm not gonna play this, the next generation's here, whatever. It was like 50 games. It was a big bin bag of games in my old consoles. I dumped all that on the desk in GameStation, and I was like, can I get an Xbox, please? And I want an Xbox Premium, because they split the price tier back then. And I couldn't afford it. When he rung all of it up, because all those games were worth like 50 pence each or something. And I'm trying to afford something that's like 300 quid.
Yeah.
And so he rung it all up and he was like, you can't afford the premium one, but you can't afford the core.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The arcade one or whatever it's called.
Yeah. It was like the basic thing. And I was like, I just want Crackdown, sir. And so I went and picked up, and I was like, can I just trade all of this in for just Crackdown and just the core system by itself? None of the extra controller stuff that was on. Yeah. And he sort of looked at it, and he looked at the pile, and he was like, I can do that for you.
Oh,
and so, and I was like, man, you absolute legend. Massive shout out to Warwick. He became a good friend. And but that whole thing, I was like, that was a dream come true thing of like then walking away with the Xbox 360, being able to actually have it. I think owning physical media is overlooked because... You know, you did stuff like that, you can't get it. It can't get again.
And the kids today will never understand the joy of taking in a game to trade it in, only to discover that it was actually worth a lot more than you thought it was. Like, you pegged it in your mind as being like, oh, maybe I'll get like a fiver for this game here. And I remember I wish I'd kept hold of this copy now, because I had on the PS1 an original, very mint condition XCOM Enemy Unknown. I think the very first one, UFO. Oh,
the top down one, Tier 2D.
The very first one converted to PS1. And when I went to trade it in, I thought to myself, this is the least interested that anyone will be to like get this game. Maybe it'll last like £3. Mm-hmm. He's like, he turns around, he's like, okay, this is coming up as £25 for this one alone. And I'm like,
when you're a kid, that's like a fortune.
£25. What did I spend it on? So I ended up just getting like loads of trash that immediately devalued like the time after. But it's just like, if I want a copy of it now, I'm looking online, it's like £70 or
oh god, I mean, like, that is a hyper rare. I think stuff like that, I miss like being able to do those kind of things. And like that, I used to do a thing with I don't know if this was taking too much of advantage of the policy that they had, but game in the UK used to be able to get a game and you would have 20 days or something. As long as you have the receipt, you can trade it back in for full price again. And it didn't even matter if it was open. So like literally I would go get a full price game, play through
just
it
rinse through it
in a week, take it back with the receipt, trade it for another new game, play through that, because you could do it twice, and on the third time you had to keep whatever it was.
Yeah,
so I would be like, okay, I actually want to own that, but I'll do these two on the way there.
And yeah, then clever
the third one. And so like maybe that's one of the reasons they went under, to be honest.
It's a bad business practice.
But for me it was just like, yeah, every week I was like, well, like, this is how I get three things for my individual amount of money. But like, yeah, but that stuff is obviously long gone. You can't do anything even close to that on the digital storefront. Most favorite game I couldn't wait to play, I'm going to go with Halo 3, because it was just
big hype then.
The run-up to that was unlike anything else. And I just cry watching the Halo 3 reveal trailer. I was so psyched.
It's big hype, and also the fact that the cliffhanger, that awful cliffhanger for Halo 2, like made me so annoyed that I was like, I have finishing to buy Halo 3 to actually just get on with this.
Have you seen any clips of the Halo TV show?
No, not at all. Okay. The only thing I did see was that there were some people making fun of the fact that it was missing some visual effects on a plasma gun or something like that.
It's the way he holds one of the assault rifles. It's like sized wrong. There's a lot of weird visual stuff. Cortana looks terrible. I'm 3 episodes in and I don't hate it. I quite like that it's doing its own thing and it feels like its own thing. But when they bring Cortana in, the CG, it looks terrible. It's like just got like brown hair and it's like, as if it's like an actual person, but it's a hologram, but it should be more blue.
Okay.
It just doesn't look right. But yeah, the Halo shows, it's a whole thing unto itself. Next question from PG Quips, who says, what do we think about the state? I love the PG Quip. What do we think about the state of the first person shooter genre in general right now? I've definitely not played a single player FPS with a decent story in a very long time or seen much change to the formula. Now, I like where the first person shooter genre is at. You're getting insanely kinetic stuff like Doom. I think Modern Warfare, the new Call of Duty, is the best it's ever been. But true, I can't think of the last truly great single player first person shooter story. I don't even know when that was.
It seems like, apart from Doom Eternal, I would say that we've not really seen much innovation in the genre for quite some time.
The last time Super Hot was like the only thing I would point to.
Oh, I was going to say Super Hot and also Bulletstorm because of its sort of like combo chaining sort of stuff together.
You like that that beat one that you recommended to me that I forget the name of.
Oh, BPM. But that's like a one and done. No one's even bothered to do that. In fact, there was one other game that somebody recommended me recently on Twitter that's like that with dubstep music instead of like heavy metal, which actually does sound pretty cool. But it's like, I don't see the genre as being able to move beyond the kind of homogeneity that we experience from modern warfare style shooters. Like you've got Call of Duty, you've got your Battlefield, and you've got like your Star Wars Battlefront or whatever. Like it's like all of those games, they kind of feel the same now because how you sell games, you appeal to the mass market, and how you appeal to the mass market, you make sure that all the UI feels the same, all the controls feel the same, all the shooting kind of feels the same with a few bits thrown in. Titanfall 2 was probably again one of the last ones that actually felt like it was pushing the genre forward. When we had parkour elements and the likes of Blink, I believe it was, or Brink, I can't remember which one.
Brink was one,
where it was like the parkour elements on that. That's another innovation, but that was back in like 2010. Like we haven't seen anything like sort of that engaging where they've gone for like movement and shooting and all this other stuff. Apart I feel like, from the likes of Doom Eternal. That's pretty much it.
You've kind of got like the id Software attempt at the whole combat chess thing, and like everything's got a grapple hook now, which is a nice after effect of how much Doom, have an impact Doom had in terms of general movement. But I remember playing Super Hot, and I know that game has an in joke about like tell the world how innovative this is inside the game.
Yeah,
but it is. I think in regards to literally making it so time moves when you do. I loved Super Hot so much, and the sequel was so overlooked as well. But stuff like
is that the VR only one, that one.
No, that's the thing. There's a full-on sequel to Super Hot called Mind Control Delete, which is like it's like an endless runner version of Super Hot, which is, it feels like the creators would have sort of, everyone badgered them for more stuff, and they were like, okay, we'll give you an endless version of this.
Then you just leave us alone.
Yeah, just leave us alone. And it's like, you can hit credits on it, but then you need to wait, I think it's 2 hours before you can play again. And you have to literally sit and wait while the game fake reboots, because it's all like this in-game universe rebooting. Yeah. And so like that was them just going like, can you leave us alone? Because we've done this and you've had your fill and leave us alone. But yeah, Super Hot stands out. Shadow Warrior, I think something like Devil Daggers, like it's such a throwback to like PS1 arena shooting stuff.
I actually just covered that in a list recently, Devil Daggers.
There is so much more you can do, especially with if you bring back old school polygonal graphics and then make it so it runs nice and smoothly.
But when you look at the AAA forum, they all are kind of the same. Like even the likes of Resident Evil 8, who you'd feel with the horror sort of dynamic would allow for more things. It still plays like a relatively basic first person shooter. The story and setting is different, obviously, but.
Yeah, I think Call of Duty is such a massive behemoth, and it's out every year that it's a really hard genre to compete in. Like, if you were going to do anything even remotely close to the military shooter space, you're going to be up against Call of Duty. And I think what's the sniper one that's done quite well? Not Sniper Elite, but the is it Ghost Soldier or something? I forget the name of that.
Okay.
Thing. I played the first two as well, but I forget the name.
Okay.
But I feel like they've managed to carve out their own little niche of being more tactics based. And I think Rainbow Six Siege is more tactics based rather than the sort of run and gun twitch stuff of Call of Duty. So, but still quite homogenous in terms of the control scheme and the general sort of feel and stuff. So I do know what he means.
I just don't know where you take the genre after this though.
No.
Like it feels like we've done everything in some form or another. We've tried experimenting with movement, we've tried experimenting with VR, we've tried experimenting with the sort of like battle royale and different modes and zombie wave stuff. Like, it's like, where do you take what you can shoot at next?
Well, that's why I quite like Super Hot. Like, I like the way Super Hot approaches it. And I think like BPM, like if you're going to actually change the core of how this moves, then I think maybe that's something you can do more with.
I tell you what, I'd love to see come back in some form or another is the body swapping mechanic that they had in one of those Battlefield 2, like being able to just like hot swap from one character to another. If they put that into a massive open world thing where you just had tons of in Battlefront, you have in Star Wars Battlefront, you've got tickets, they call them, where it's just loads and loads of clones or like people on your army, and when they die, that your those go down, and when it reaches zero, you lose no matter what. If they had that, but the ability to just literally flip between all of them at once and only had like a team of 10, but controlling 300 players, that would actually be a really fun game.
Oh man, I think we mentioned it before, but like Conflict Desert Storm had a thing where you
that was
play like four
fun.
Dudes at once, and it's like you would position your sniper literally in real time, and then you'd be like
give him the order.
give them the order and then port out and jump into someone else, but they would finish that order off. So it's like, okay, you cover me from up here, then I'm going to run in as the rifleman, but you can do all those things together. I miss that stuff. And like what you said, if you had like a range of classes ostensibly that you could all control at once, like, yeah, I think there's more to do with that. Like, yeah, the body swap thing that was in Battlefield and Driver and then not really much else. It is in Superhot, ironically enough. Yeah. But I feel like you could do more with that. Especially in like a competitive, if you 100%. Were up against one other player, but they can control a small army, that'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, that'd be great.
And so you don't actually get the kill until you kill the one that they are controlling.
If you and I were making this game, I'd call it And Whose Army. That's how we do it, because it's like, you and whose army? It's like, let's go.
That'd be cool. And yeah, if the kill only counts when you kill the actual consciousness, like you've got to try and...
you don't know which one it is.
Yeah. So like you've got to like whittle it down until you kill the actual player or something. That'd be kind of cool. Schmance Schmilliamson says, who is the best British spy? James Bond, Johnny English, or Austin Powers? He says, I know it's Powers, but I wanted your take. Also, Jason Bourne, Jack Ryan, or Jack Reacher? What do you think for the British spy first?
Oh, man. I mean, like, they're all... I enjoy a bit of Johnny English, if I'm honest, because the fact that he's so bumbling and incompetent, but he always saves the day. And he's not
saves the day.
He wouldn't hurt a fly, and he's just a nice person.
Yeah, whereas like James Bond is like a bit of an arsehole. Like I just
100%. Yeah, like, there's so, like especially toxic, during his run with the Roger Moore era, he was just like zero fighting, zero action. All of the greasy schmoozer is how you call him. Like,
a greasy schmoozer is the best way to describe. I didn't grow up on that much Bond. I've seen GoldenEye. I've seen a handful of them. I've seen the Pierce Brosnan ones onwards, but I've never been a fan of the character. Johnny English, he's the most English. If you want British spy,
he's just stupid.
Like he's just this bumbling sort of.
Where's Eggsy from Kingsman?
From Kingsman, I mean, he's all right. I thought the Kingsman sequel was horrendous. But
the sequel's bad, but the first film was.
As a character, he's all right. Yeah. Austin Powers. Maybe Mike Myers. I guess so. Myers rather.
Let's just give Mike Myers something because he's not doing much at the moment, is he?
He's not, to be honest. He's not been Austin Powers in a while. That's the 20-year-ago nostalgia trip that hasn't happened yet. Everything else has been brought back.
Could you imagine how cringe-worthy if it came back? It would just be like, it's like, here's every non-PC thing.
He's putting the little finger to his hand again. I guarantee he's been offered that, and he's for his own sanctity, he said no. But yeah, I guarantee 100%, that's a thing.
Because he probably is just like, I'm just going to distance myself from this project. It made me, but it will also destroy me.
What was that thing that killed him, that love guru, when he did
the worst thing ever? That was so bad.
It was going to be terrible. Who would you prefer out of Jason Bourne, Jack Ryan, or Jack Reacher? I've only just finished the Reacher TV series, which fell off an effing cliff about halfway through.
But you're going to have to remind me who the hell half of these are. Like Jason Bourne, I know him obviously, but
and Jack Ryan,
which version? Because we got a different Jason Bourne.
That's kind
of the
thing. And there's two versions of Jack Ryan. There's two versions of Jack Reacher. The Jack Reacher played by the dude that's in The Quiet Place, whose name I've completely forgot.
Oh, John Krasinski.
John Krasinski. That one's really good. Season one of that is really good. And then Jack Reacher, the new version of Reacher as the actor, Alan Richman, or Rickman, or you call him. Not Alan Rickman. Not Alan Rickman. He's called Alan something. He's a big lad. He's closer to the actual Jack Reacher, but there is also the Tom Cruise Jack Reacher. I'm just going to say Jason Bourne, to be honest.
I think that Jason Bourne's the safest bet out of all of them because
I reckon he could take them all on, to be honest. Yeah. New Reacher has a really brutal fighting style, but it's just a few elbows to the face. If you dodge them, I reckon you can take him down. And then Jack Ryan isn't that great in combat anyway. He's like an analyst who gets thrown into the field.
But Jason Bourne is just a machine.
Yeah,
he just does whatever you need him to do.
Yeah, he's a Swiss Army knife with a face. Like, I think you just send Jason Bourne in and he gets the job done. I should read. I'll leave a little edit point there.
Sure.
Pause. There was one thing you wanted answering. It's this next question.
Okay.
So did you check any note of when we started? I think it was at 4:15.
Yeah, it's 4:15. We've gone half an hour now.
Cool. So we'll do the last one. I know Will Bourne needs this at 11. Next question and final question from Andy Taylor, who says, hope we're both doing well and love the podcast. Well, thank you very much.
Cheers.
He says, now that we've gone through Elden Ring, what would be our top three bosses from all these Soulsborne games? For them, it is the owl slash father from Sekiro is their favorite boss fight ever. Have a great Easter. Also, honestly, all of you have a great Easter. I should have said that at the very beginning. But
enjoy
it is the Easter weekend. Yeah, what's your top three bosses from all Soulsborne games?
This is so tough because there are so many good fights within the franchise. And I actually put out a tweet straight after we saw this question pop up asking for the worst. And man, there's a lot of contentious opinions there with people just hating on the ancient Wyvern or Wyvern, however you want to pronounce it. Then there was ones like the people just hate the Ornstein and Smough one. Anything
what's
like
that
a
thing?
Boss.
In Souls 2, there's like a big fat lizard that you fight in a circular room and it just rolls out. It rolls
sideways.
Oh, the
gluttonous, something, whatever it's called. Yeah,
that is the worst thing they've ever designed, just in a pure, like, bad sense.
It's just like a being destroyed by a big meat sleeping bag. It's not a good laugh.
a big roll.
It's a tough one to say because I've had such good boss battles in Elden Ring at the moment. Like Radahn has to be up there as
love
one of my favorite.
Melania, I love.
Like just summoning all the people and then just rushing up the hill to die, like watching them all get absolutely creamed and just like his tiny little horse that he's got. There's so much going on in it. You're just like, what is this?
See, the thing is, like
discount, like arcade Ganon looking thing going on. Like,
yeah, like whenever someone asks for the best fight, I think that it has to be an element of spectacle in there. So I think I really love the dragon fight in Sekiro, the big ancient dragon. It's a very easy fight, but I love that you're like dancing on the wind, like you're in midair for a lot of it, and you're like doing these lightning, wielding lightning to hurt it. I just think that is insane. So I would go, that would be one of my, it wouldn't be my number one. I think my number one at the minute is Melania because I just love that fight. You can dance around. Yeah. So much.
That's the second phase with the unfolding blossom attack. It's just one of, it's just so beautiful.
Like it looks gorgeous, well, but it's challenging, and it's, you can have like a back and forth. So I think there's so many to pick from. I think, I mean, the thing is as well, it's like what makes a really good boss. Like something is infuriating, like Genichiro, but when I actually went one-on-one and matched those blows with him, like that was a hell of a fight. So I might have to have that up there too.
Like I definitely want to include some stuff from Sekiro just because of the fact that once you master the timing, once you get it down, it feels just outstanding to do. Like I would agree that the fight against Owl, once you've gone back through the memory and unlocked the secret ending where you're fighting him at the estate, that is so brutal just because of the fact that you've got him at his prime, throwing all of the tricks in. Plus, he's got a few cheeky little skills that he didn't tell you about. So when he's like throwing his bird at you and stuff like that, you're like, okay, he means business this time around. But I also, so that would be my one from Sekiro. Elden Ring, it's Radahn. And then my top, it would maybe be something from, my gut tells me that it wants to be Ornstein and Smaug, but I'm also thinking that the Godskin Apostle and the Godskin Peeler, because of how much they take that formula of here's a two-on-one gank boss, but they are supremely difficult because of like the rolling, the snake body and all of the extra stuff on top. I'm like, oh, that was a really challenging but rewarding fight, you know?
I always like, that's the thing. I always like when it's an actual fight. It's not just a dodging splash damage. It has, like, I mean, I like the big spectacle fights, but I also like the really gritty one-on-one stuff too.
I can't remember what his name's completely slipped it. It's he's the owner of Sif.
Artorias is in Dark Souls 1. He's the DLC guy.
The giant samurai? That's him?
No, Artorias is, well, he's like a big knight. He's like a fallen knight. That's Dark Souls 1 though. I'm going quite far back.
Oh, I'm going to have to quickly Google this because there's so many and I know that it's going to be on the tip of my tongue if I don't do it. So you vamp, Scott.
I'll tell you what I keep forgetting to do. I'm going to do a clap and then I know what to look for in the waveform because then I can edit stuff.
That is a smart plan. And let me just double check. It is Artorias of the Abyss. Artorias the Abyss Walker. That's who I'm thinking of. And I got it wrong with Samurai, but it's just because he does this thing where he like, oh no, actually no, I'm thinking... Dark Souls 2 Artorias.
Artorias.
There's like a boss that you have in Dark Souls 2 where you fight like a Dark Souls 2 best bosses. That'll probably be like number one. Here we go.
A samurai in Dark Souls 2.
It's hard to explain. I'm probably getting it wrong.
Some lad with a big sword. Oh, you don't think? Well, it can't be the pursuer.
It's not the pursuer. I've got him in a picture right here. I'm just trying to find a site that's not trying to like screw me over with ad blocker. Old Dragon Slayer. No. Twin Dragons. No. It is Sir Alon.
Sir Alon?
Yes. Sir Alon is amazing.
I don't even think I've ever... Wait a minute. Oh, okay. I don't even know who that is.
A great fight.
We should go to that point.
Okay, right.
Somehow different.
Sir Alon, we looked it up. Yes, that is the boss battle that I would put in there because it feels like it's the most honorable fight of the game. I don't like Dark Souls 2 for the most part. I made that very, very clear. I don't like the hitboxes and I don't like the near 360 degree auto tracking that all enemies seem to have. But this fight actually felt the most fair and honorable because it's like, even at the end, even in defeat, he's like, he's desperate to defeat you, and his moveset becomes quicker and more aggressive, but he knows when he's beaten, and you see him like take the knee, and he's just like, right, that's it, you've got me, fair enough, like I fought my hardest and you were the better.
That's cool. That's like a probably honorable, like, as opposed to other ones doing like splash damage at the end and catching you anyway or whatever. I like the nameless one and the nameless hero from that very
nameless king.
Well, there's the, oh God, that's the thing. There's the nameless king from Souls 3, but there's also that nameless one that you fight at the very end of Souls 3, which is almost like a clone of you. And it, you can kind of like, it uses everything against you and like that you've already mastered. And I like that sort of approach to it. But yeah, I mean, I think it's weird with Souls stuff because I view a lot of the bosses as like just something to get through because it is just so challenging. And I feel like in Elden Ring, that's when I actually had fun with the bosses a lot more because I was summoning in to help other people beat the game and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I'd also throw like Margot in there. But I think like in terms of like an absolute, I don't know, best thing. I don't know. It would just be, it'd be a combination of those things. Maybe I just go with the dragon from Sekiro because I just weirdly love that fight. But yes, also me and Josh did a podcast on Monday where we ranked all the Souls games and people were asking us what you thought of me saying that Bloodborne was the second worst one. So do you have very quick thoughts on that? And we'll revisit it at some point in the future. What do you think of Bloodborne?
I think the Bloodborne is one of the best things that From Software has ever touched. I think that it's absolutely fantastic. But I would say in terms of my overall enjoyment levels, it just ranks for me just behind Elden Ring and Dark Souls 3. But it's not a quality. I just love Dark Souls 3 and I'm loving Elden Ring. So I feel like Bloodborne is unfortunately just that little bit lower because I haven't played it in that long.
See, my top few were Elden, Dark Souls 1 and Dark Souls 3, and then Josh had Dark Souls 3 way lower. But we will revisit this and maybe do our own version of the ranking. We can talk more about FromSoft stuff. Because it's been the UBP. Massive thank you to everybody for sending in all their questions. Happy Easter to all, and we'll catch you all next week. For now, I've been Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Bye, everyone.
The Untitled Battle Podcast. We'll catch you next time.
Bye. Bye.
That wasn't remotely structured for the ending.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.